The Ring and the Book by Robert Browning. Part 3 of Book 5. Such was the starting. Now of the further step. In lieu of taking penance in good part, the monk, with hue and cry, summons a mob to make up bonfire of the convent, say, and the deacon's pretty piece of virtue, save the ears of the court, I try to save my head. Instructed by the ingenuous postulant, taxes the bishop with adultery. Mud must needs pair off with mud, and filth with filth. Such being my next experience. Who knows not? The couple, father and mother of my wife, returned to Rome, published before my lords, put into print, made circulate far and wide, that they had cheated me, who cheated them. Pompilia, I suppose their daughter, drew breath first mid Rome's worst rankness, through the deed of a drab and a rogue, was byblow bastard babe of a nameless strumpet, passed off, palmed on me, as the daughter with the dowry. Daughter? Dirt of the kennel! Dowry? Dust of the street! Not more, not less, not else but... Oh, ah, assuredly, a Franceschini and my very wife. Now, take this charge as you will, for false or true. This charge preferred before your very selves, who judge me now. I pray you, adjudge again, classing it with the cheats or with the lies, by which category I suffer most. But of their reckoning, theirs who dealt with me in either fashion, I reserve my word, justify that in its place. I am now to say, whichever point of the charge might poison most, Pompilia's duty was no doubtful one. You put the protestation in her mouth, henceforward and forevermore, avaunt, ye fiends, who drop the skies and glare revealed, in your own shape, no longer father mine, nor mother mine. Too nakedly you hate me, whom you looked as if you loved once, me, whom, whether true or false, your tale now damns, divulged thus to my public infamy, private perdition, absolute overthrow. For hate my husband to your heart's content, I, spoil and prey of you, from first to last. I, who have done you the blind service, lured the lion to your pitfall. I, thus left to answer for my ignorant bleeding there. I should have been remembered and withdrawn from the first of the natural fury, not flung loose, a proverb and a byword men will mouth at the crossway, in the corner, up and down Rome and Arezzo, there, full in my face. If my lord, missing them and finding me, content himself with casting his reproach to drop in the street where such impostors die. Ah, but that husband, what the wonder were! If far from casting thus away the rag, smeared with the plague his hand had chanced upon, sewn to his pillow by Lucusta's wile, far from abolishing root, stem, and branch, the misgrowth of infectious mistletoe foisted into his stock for honest graft. If he, repudiate not, renounce nowise, but guarding, guiding me, maintain my cause by making it his own, what other way? To keep my name for me, he call it his, claim it of who would take it by their lie. To save my wealth for me, or, babe of mine, their lie was framed to beggar at the birth. He bid them loose grasp, give our gold again, refuse to become partner with the pair, even in a game which, played adroitly, gives its winner life's great wonderful new chance of marrying, to wit, a second time. Ah, did he do thus? What a friend were he! Anger he might show. Who can stamp out flame, yet spread no black of the brand? Yet rough, albeit, in the act, as whose bare feet feel embers scorch. What grace were his, what gratitude were mine? Such protestations should have been my wife's. Looking for this, do I exact too much? Why, here's the, word for word, so much, no more, a vowel she made, her pure, spontaneous speech, to my brother, the abate, at first blush, ere the good impulse had begun to fade. So did she make confession for the pair, so pour forth praises in her own behalf.
Eh, the false letter, interposed my lords, the simulated writing. 'Twas a trick. You traced the signs, she merely marked the same. The product was not hers, but yours. Alack, I want no more impulsion to tell truth from the other trick, the torture inside there. I confess all. Let it be understood. And deny nothing. If I baffle you so, can so fence in the plenitude of right, that my poor lathen dagger puts aside each pass of the Bilboa, beats you all the same, what matters inefficiency of blade? Mine and not hers the letter. Conceited lords. Impute to me that practice. Take as proved I taught my wife her duty, made her see what it behooved her see and say and do, feel in her heart, and with her tongue declare, and, whether sluggish or recalcitrant, forced her to take the right step. I myself, marching in mere marital rectitude. And who finds fault here, say the tale be true? Would not my lords commend the priest whose zeal seized on the sick, morose or moribund, by the palsy-smitten finger, made it cross his brow correctly at the critical time? Or answered for the inarticulate babe at baptism, in its stead declared the faith, and saved what else would perish unprofessed? True, the incapable hand may rally yet, renounce the sign with renovated strength. The babe may grow up man and moliness. And so Pompilia, set in the good path and left to go alone there, soon might see that too frank forward, all too simple straight, her step was, and declined to tread the rough, when here lay, tempting foot, the meadow side, and there the coppice called with singing birds. Soon she discovered she was young and fair, that many in Arezzo knew as much. Yes, this next cup of bitterness, my lords, had to begin go filling, drop by drop, its measure up of full disgust for me, filtered into by every noisome drain, society's sink toward which all moisture runs. Would you not prophesy, she on whose brow is stamped the note of the imputation that we know, rightly or wrongly, mothered with a whore, such an one, to disprove the frightful charge, what will she but exaggerate chastity, ere in excess of wifehood, as it were, renounce even levity's permitted youth, though not youth struck to age by a thunderbolt? Cry, woof in the sheepfold, where's the sheep dares bleat, knowing the shepherd listens for a growl? So you expect. How did the devil decree? Why, my lords, just the contrary, of course. It was in the house from the window, at the church from the hassock, where the theatre lent its lodge, or staging for the public show left space, that still Pompilia needs must find herself, launching her looks forth, letting looks reply, as arrows to a challenge, on all sides, ever new contribution to her lap, till one day, what is it, knocks at my clenched teeth, but the cup full, curse collected, all for me. And I must needs drink this gallant's praise, that minion's prayer, the other fop's reproach, and come at the dregs to Caponsacchi. Sirs, I, chin deep in a marsh of misery, struggling to extricate my name and fame and fortune from the marsh would drown them all, my face the sole unstrangled part of me, I must have this new gadfly in that face, must free me from the attacking lover, too. Men say I battled ungracefully enough, was harsh, uncouth, and ludicrous beyond the proper part of the husband. Have it so. Your lordships are considerate, at least. You order me to speak in my defense plainly. Expect no quavering tuneful trills as when you bid a singer solace you. Nor look that I shall give it for a grace. Stans pere in uno. You remember well, in the one case, 'tis a plain song too severe, this story of my wrongs, and that I ache and need a chair in the other. Ask you me why, when I felt this trouble flap my face, already pricked with every shame could perch, when with her parents my wife plagued me too, why I enforced not exhortation mild to leave whore's tricks and let my brows alone with malt of comfits, promise of perfume? Far from that. No, you took the opposite course. Breathed threatenings, rage, and slaughter. What you will. And the end has come. The doom is verily here, unhindered by the threatening. See fate's flare full on each face of the dead guilty three. Look at them well, and now, lords, look at this. Tell me, if on that day when I found first that Caponsacchi thought the nearest way to his church was some half mile round by my door, and that he so admired, shall I suppose, the manner of the swallows come and go between the props of the window overhead, that window happening to be my wife's, as to stand gazing by the hour on high of May eves, while she sat and let him smile. If I, instead of threatening, talking big, showing hair powder, a prodigious pinch, for poison in a bottle, making believe at desperate doings with a bauble sword and other bugaboo and baby work, had, with the vulgarest household implement, calmly and quietly cut off, clean through bone, but one joint of one finger of my wife, saying, "For listening to the serenade, here's your ring finger shorter a full third. Be certain I will slice away next joint, next time that anybody underneath seems somehow to be sauntering, as he hoped, a flower would eddy out of your hand to his, while you please fidget with the branch above of the rose tree in the terrace." Had I done so, why, there had followed a quick sharp scream, some pain, much calling for plaster, damage to the dress, a somewhat sulky countenance next day, perhaps reproaches, but reflections too. I don't hear much of harm that Malchus did after the incident of the ears, my lords. St. Peter took the efficacious way. Malchus was sore, but silenced for his life. He did not hang himself in the potter's field like Judas, who was trusted with the bag and treated the sops after he proved a thief. So, by this time, my true and obedient wife might have been telling beads with a gloved hand, awkward a little at pricking hearts and darts on sampler, possibly, but well otherwise. Not where Rome shudders now to see her lie. I give that for the course a wise man takes. I took the other, however, tried the fool's, the lighter remedy, brandished rapier dread, with corkball at the tip, boxed Malchus's ear, instead of severing the cartilage, called her a terrible nickname, and the like. And there an end. And what was the end of that? What was the good effect of the gentle course? Why, one night, I went drowsily to bed, dropped asleep suddenly, not suddenly woke, but did wake, with rough rousing and loud cry, to find noon in my face, a crowd in my room, fumes in my brain, fire in my throat, my wife gone, God knows whither, rifled vesture chest and ransacked money coffer. What does it mean? The servants had been drugged too, stared and yawned.
"It must be that our lady has eloped."
"Whither, and with whom?"
"With whom but the canon's self? One recognizes Caponsacchi there."
By this time, the admiring neighborhood joined chorus round me while I rubbed my eyes.
"'Tis months since their intelligence began. A comedy the town was privy to. He wrote and she wrote, she spoke, he replied, and was going in and out of your house last night was easy work for one. To be plain with you? Accustomed to do both at dusk and dawn when you were absent. At the villa, you know, where husbandry required the master mind. Did you not know? Why, we all knew, you see."
And presently, bit by bit, the full and true particulars of the tale were volunteered with all the breathless zeal of friendship.
Thus matters were managed at the seventh hour of night.
Later, at daybreak,
Caponsacchi came. While you and all your household slept like death, drugged as your supper was with drowsy stuff.
And your own cousin Guillichini, too. Either or both entered your dwelling place, plundered it at their pleasure, made prize of all, including your wife.
Oh, your wife led the way, out of doors, on to the gate.
But gates are shut in a decent town to darkness and such deeds. They climbed the wall. Your lady must be lithe. At the gap, the broken bit.
Torrione, true! To escape the questioning guard at the proper gate, Clemente, where at the inn, hard by, the horse, just outside, a calash in readiness, took the two principals, all alone at last, to gate San Spirito, which overlooks the road, leads to Perugia, Rome, and Liberty.
Bit by bit, thus made up mosaic-wise, flat lay my fortune. Tessellated floor, imperishable tracery, devils should foot and frolic it on, around my broken gods, over my desecrated hearth. So much for the terrible effect of threatening, sirs. Well, this way I was shaken wide awake, doctored and drenched, somewhat unpoisoned so. Then set on horseback and bid seek the lost. I started alone, head of me, heart of me, fire, and each limb as languid. Ah, sweet lords, bethink you. Poison, torture, try persuade the next refractionary mulinist with that. Floundered through day and night, another day, and yet another night, and so at last, as Lucifer kept falling to find hell, tumbled into the courtyard of an inn at the end, and fell on whom I thought to find, even Caponsacchi, what part once was priest, cast to the winds now with the cassock rags, in cape and sword a cavalier confessed. There stood he, chiding dilatory grooms, chafing then only horse flesh, and no team of eagles would supply the last relay, whirl him along the league, the one post more, between the couple and Rome and Liberty. 'Twas dawn. The couple were rested in a sort, and though the lady, tired, the tenderer sex, still lingered in her chamber, to adjust the limp hair, look for any blush astray, she would descend in a twinkling. "Have you out the horses, therefore?" So did I find my wife. Is the case complete? Do your eyes here see with mine? Even the parties dare deny no one point out of all these points. What follows next?
Why, that then was the time, you interpose, or then or never, while the fact was fresh, to take the natural vengeance. Then thus they and you. Somebody had stuck a sword beside you while he pushed you on your horse. 'Twas requisite to slay the couple, Count.
Just so my friends say. Kill, they cry in a breath, who presently, when matters grow to a head, and I do kill the offending ones indeed, when crime of theirs, only surmised before, is patent, proved indisputably now. When remedy for wrong untried at the time, which law professes shall not fail a friend, is thrice tried now, found threefold worse than null, when what might turn to transient shade, who knows, solidifies into a blot which breaks hell's black off in pale flakes for fear of mine. Then, when I claim and take revenge, "So rash," they cry, "so little reverence for the law?" Listen, my masters, and distinguish here. At first I called in law to act and help. Seeing I do so, "Why, 'tis clear," they cry, "you shrank from gallant readiness and risk, were coward, the thing's inexplicable else." Sweet my lords, let the thing be. I fall flat, play the reed, not the oak, to breath of man. Only inform my ignorance. Say I stand convicted of the having been afraid, proved a poltroon, no lion but a lamb. Does that deprive me of my right of lamb, and give my fleece and flesh to the first wolf? Are eunuchs, women, children, shieldless quite, against attack their own timidity tempts? Cowardice were misfortune and no crime. Take it that way. Since I am fallen so low, I scarce dare brush the fly that blows my face, and thank the man who simply spits not there. Unless the court be generous, comprehend how one brought up at the very feet of law, as I, awaits the grave Gamaliel's nod, ere he clench fist at outrage, much less stab. How, ready enough to rise at the right time, I still could recognize no time mature, unsanctioned by a move of the judgment seat. So, mute in misery, eyed my masters here motionless, till the authoritative word pronounced amercement. There's the riddle solved. This is just why I slew nor her nor him, but called in law, law's delegate in the place, and bade arrest the guilty couple, sirs. We had some trouble to do so. You have heard, they braved me, he with arrogance and scorn, she with a volubility of curse, a conversancy in the skill of tooth and claw, to make suspicion seem absurd. Nay, an alacrity to put to proof at my own throat, my own sword, teach me so, to try conclusions better the next time. Which did the proper service with the mob. They never tried to put on mask at all. Two avowed lovers, forcibly torn apart, upbraid the tyrant as in a playhouse scene, eh, and with proper clapping and applause from the audience that enjoys the bold and free. I kept still, said to myself, "There's law." Anon we searched the chamber where they passed the night, found what confirmed the worst was feared before. However needless confirmation now. The witches circle intact, charms undisturbed, that raise the spirit and succubus. Letters, to wit, love-laden, each the bag of the bee that bore honey from lily and rose to Cupid's hive. Now poetry in some rank blossom burst, now prose. "Come here, go there, wait such a while. He's at the villa. Now he's back again. We are saved. We are lost. We are lovers all the same." All in order. All complete. Even to a clue to the drowsiness that happed so opportune. No mystery when I read, "Of all things, find what wine Sir Jealousy decides to drink." Red wine? Because a sleeping potion, dust dropped into white, discolors wine and shows. "Oh, but we did not write a single word. Somebody forged the letters in our name," both in a breast protested presently. "Aha, Sacchetti again."
Dame, quoth the Duke, what meaneth this epistle? Counsel me. I pick from out thy placket and peruse, wherein my page averreth thou art white and warm and wonderful, twixt pap and pap.
Sir, laughed the lady, 'tis a counterfeit. Thy page did never stroke but Diane's breast, the pretty hound I nurture for thy sake. To lie were loza. By my fay, no more.
And no more say I too, and spare the court. Ah, the court. Yes, I come to the court's self. Such the case, so complete in fact and proof, I laid at the feet of law. There sat my lords. Here sit they now. So may they ever sit in easier attitude than suits my haunch. In this same chamber did I bear my swords of the soul and not the body. Shun no shame. Shrink from no probing of the ulcerous part, since confident in nature, which is God, that she who, for wise ends, concocts a plague, curbs at the right time the plague's virulence too. Law renovates even Lazarus, cures me. Caesar thou seekest? To Caesar thou shalt go. Caesar's at Rome. To Rome accordingly. End of part 3.